Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I counted today, and I've had sex with 8 people who I met on Twitter. It's the best dating app. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator, a sex blogger, and I think I've slept with people I met on Twitter. Probably.
I know for a fact that you have, but I don't want to out anyone right now.
I have.
I've been with you through that journey. Okay, so today we're doing a live show. We are here at the Sexual Freedom Summit in Alexandria, Virginia. This is so exciting. I love doing live shows. And we were bouncing around like what we wanted to do for the live show. And one of the things we wanted to talk about is how to socialize with sex bloggers, because you might have noticed this is a space where you socialize with sex bloggers, or you can at least.
There are so many of us here. They're all in this room.
Yeah, I'm not really sure like what y'all are going to get out of this as sex bloggers, other than being like, oh yeah, I have been hit on in those creepy ways. Relatable content.
This is just a room full of solidarity.
Solidarity. Oh. First pun of the night, y'all. Okay, so let's get into it. Bex, what assumptions do people make about you because you work in the sex industry?
I mean, the obvious one, like, I think everyone who works in the sex industry gets the, you want to have all the sex all the time with all the people.
I mean,
which, like, sometimes. Or that you're, like, I'm going to say they assume you're a slut in, like, the ways society uses that word. Because, like, also I am. But, like, I think they put a lot of their own assumptions onto that. And also, I get a lot of people that are intimidated.
Yeah.
That, like, think that you must know everything about sex because you do this. And, like, I mean, I'm great. But, like, yeah, you get a lot of people that are, like, intimidated by my sexuality, which is weird to me.
Yeah, I had a partner once tell me that I was, like, the most knowledgeable person about kink that he had ever been with, and I, like, laughed in his face a little bit because I don't think of myself that way. Like, I don't think you can really know that much about sex and kink in the sense that, like, everybody likes different things and everybody's different, so it's just a matter of, like, relearning things with each new partner.
Yeah, I think that's the secret thing that we know, is that people are fucking different. Yeah. And we just know, like, to pay attention and talk to people about things.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Another assumption I get all the time is people think that if I go on a date with them or I have some kind of sexual encounter with them, that I'm definitely going to write about it. Which I like to saltily say that, like, unless it was good, probably not. So, like, don't hold your breath. But, like, actually,
especially,
like,
especially memorable.
Yeah. I am, like, I have consent practices in place around that, and I think a lot of people who write about sex or make media about sex also do. So, like, I've had Tinder dudes, like, unmatch me and tell me beforehand that it was because they realized I was a sex blogger. Pro tip, read people's bios before you start writing on them. Kind of important. But they were just, like, fully assuming that I would write about them if we had any kind of interaction, and that's, like, a sad statement about what people think about sex bloggers, I think.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people have the assumption of sex blogging as, like, just erotica blogging, which it's, that is still a big facet of sex blogging, but it's not the kind that we do, and I don't think it's the only kind out there in the way a lot of people assume.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just a journal of everyone I've fucked. Although, that would be a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, I have a journal for that.
Yeah.
Or, like, texting a friend. Or tweeting, but, you know, in moderation.
You don't tweet in moderation. I follow you.
I one time did, like, an average thing where I looked at how many tweets I tweeted in a month and then averaged it by the amount of days, and it said that I had tweeted, like, 50 times a day, and I was like, that can't be right. But also, it might be
right. It might be right.
Gotta work on that. Sometimes I tweet during sex, but that's a whole separate issue. Don't do that unless the person you're fucking is okay with it. It's really rude. Okay, so fundamental question. If you're into a sex blogger, like you're like following them on Twitter or whatever, you have a crush on a sex blogger from afar, should you even flirt with them? That's like before you even get to step one. This is step zero.
I think that's a complicated one. Mm-hmm. I think you should have some sort of, like, friendly relationship with them first.
Yeah.
Because I think it falls similarly into the categories of hitting on people while they're at work, and, like, mm-hmm. retail, or, like, working in some sort of service industry type thing,
mm-hmm.
where, like, there is some sort of a requirement for us to be performative for,
yes.
because sex blogging is a job, and we have created a brand, and there is some sort of obligation to lean into that and play along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you just, like, immediately start hitting on someone in, like, even in public spaces, like a conference or whatever, it can be hard to balance, like, reacting the way you want to and reacting in line with your brand and who you are, and also being, like, approachable and friendly, whether or not you're necessarily feeling it in that moment.
Yeah.
So I think it's better to kind of start out just building a relationship with them where you can talk friendly and, like, not be necessarily in that fan space anymore.
Yeah. I've definitely had problems navigating consent when people are flirting with me in public spaces like Twitter, especially if it's, like, someone powerful or, like, someone else who works in the sex industry, where, like, publicly saying, no, thank you, not interested, is going to have repercussions of some sort for me, yeah. even if the repercussion is just, like, people are going to see it on the public TL and think I'm whatever, fill in the blank, insulting word. So yeah, you want to be mindful of that. I would also say, like, pay attention to the person's, like, relationship structure and the information that they have out there about what kinds of relationships they might be in. Like, I have either polyamorous or non-monogamous listed in my Twitter bio, in part because I want people to know that I'm, like, potentially open to flirts and stuff. But if someone doesn't have that info, or if someone does have that info and they're, like, monogamous or whatever, like, don't hit on them. It's rude and disrespectful.
Yeah.
How else can you know if someone on the internet might be open to you flirting with them?
Oof. I think one of the easiest things is to kind of, like, softball flirt, like, throw, like, just a little thing out there and see if they pick up on it, or, like, even tweeting things yourself and seeing if they respond to that, mm-hmm. like, giving them opportunities to kind of come to you, and just see how they react to those things. You don't necessarily want to be like, hey, you want to meet up later? Like, as the first thing you've said to someone, I'm doing that thing where I lean away from the mic.
Love it.
I know. but you can kind of, like, if they post a selfie, be like, oh, you look really cute or whatever, where it can be a compliment and it can be a friendly thing, and you can see, like, well, how do they respond to that? Do they just like it, or are they going to actually, or are they, like, taking it as opportunity to start a conversation? And when you have that kind of positive feedback, it shows that they may or may not be more open to it. And then eventually, I think, just asking.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I mean, consent is very important. One of the advantages of being in the sex-positive space is that many people are, like, better versed than the average person in consent conversations and the importance of that stuff. I was just in a session with the Black Pomegranate duo, and they were talking about how, like, there's still consent issues rampant in the sex-positive and kink communities, in part because of how people can, like, be very performative about consent. So there's that to keep in mind, but I think in general, like, we have the vocab. We have the concepts, so it's good to stay mindful of those things. I also really like Twitter for this because there's sort of, like, different levels of engagement. Because if someone, like, ignores your tweet, that's, like, maybe they just didn't see it, or maybe they did see it and they were completely disinterested in whatever flirty thing you said to them. If they like your tweet, that's, like, a little bit better, but sometimes for me that's, like, just a polite acknowledgement, but also kind of like, go away, thank you.
this is a nice thing that you said, thank you, goodbye.
but then if they, like, straight up, like, reply to it, like, I met my boyf on Twitter. I say boyf, I should probably explain that means boyfriend. I don't know if folks don't know that. Some people think it's weird. I met my dude on Twitter, and he, like, tweeted a compliment at me, and I tweeted a compliment back, which is not something I would always do. That's a pretty explicit sign of interest for me. And I think that's something else to be mindful of, is, like, different people based on their introversion and extroversion levels are going to be more or less effusive in the ways that they flirt. So if someone's baseline is, like, sending out a compliment whenever you tweet at them, maybe don't take that as, like, a sign of romantic interest necessarily, but for, like, for me it often is, or at least that I find someone interesting on some level. Are you personally, let's get personal.
Ooh.
Ooh. We never do that on this show. Are you personally open to fans pursuing you? Like, maybe not, like, right after this session, because we're kind of tired out. Oof. It's been a weekend, y'all. But, like, in general, and, like, what's the best way for them to do that, if so?
Honestly, when people that are, like, fans go to hit on me, it tends to make me more uncomfortable than anything else.
Yeah.
Because, again, like, I've created a brand, and I've created a, like, X talks X on the internet and on the Dildorks and whatever. And it feels like this weird power differential when someone who is, like, a big fan comes up and is like, flirting with me. It feels like it gives me too much power.
Mm-hmm.
And also gives this weird imbalance where they know a lot about me. And it's just, like, I also, when I teach at conferences, I tend to not hook up with new people.
Yeah.
At that conference, because for that same power imbalance, that it just doesn't sit right with me.
Mm-hmm.
So more often than not, like, I shy away from that. But yeah, I think the best way to flirt with me, if you eventually want to, is to, like, get on the same level with, like, friendship and stuff, where, like, I don't feel like a fan. Like, that's,
yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to get there, and it requires that the other person be into it. Like,
yeah.
if they're not down, then you might just stay a fan forever. It's, like, it's very, very heartbreaking for me as a person with, like, a Twitter following, etc., when someone tries to hit on me and I have to say no to them, and then they react as if, like, I've hurt them, or, like, they can't be my fan anymore, or they're even like, I'm never going to read your blog again. I'm like, you know, just because you enjoy my writing, or, like, you think I'm sexy, whatever, like, I don't have to reciprocate that. And, like, to punish me for saying no is, like, really unfair and makes me feel like I did something wrong, which is also a problem in society at large. But, yeah, that's an issue that comes up. I'm, like, personally not really open to being hit on at events because I'm introverted and anxious and easily exhausted, and I'm just like, I've been at sessions all day, I just want to, like, lie in my hotel room and, like, stare at the wall and, like, scroll tweets and just, like, go blank. I do not want to, like, be engaged in, like, this high energy social interaction that is flirting, which is why Twitter is great, and I think a lot of sex bloggers are really introverted, and Twitter is often a good avenue if you want to hit on them to do that. Although, like, I think I'm an exception, that I'm just, like, open to being flirted with on Twitter. And like, I also get worried about telling folks that I've, like, dated and slept with people from Twitter, because I worry that they, like, everyone will think that, like, oh, she'll fuck you if you tweeted her. And, like, no.
Probably not.
This is a very, very low statistical chance. What are common mistakes people make when flirting with you online? This could be a whole episode.
Oh.
There's so many.
I mean, shit, I'm not, like, now I'm just thinking online dating stuff, and I'm on Grindr, so that's a whole, everything, basically, is a mistake. The app is a mistake. Downloading the app was a mistake. But I think, so I think a big thing, especially on, like, social media stuff, is jumping straight into, like, sliding into my DMs, or just DMing me, hi.
No, don't.
Why?
Like, I started doing the trick that you taught me, which is I say, what can I help you with? Which just sets a tone immediately. I love it.
That retail life. Oh, you're here. What can I help you with? Because if you're in my DMs, clearly you want to give me money. Yeah, I think I kind of equate that to walking up to someone at a party that you've never spoken to before, dragging them off into the side, into a closet, and going, hi. Like, I don't know who you are. I don't know why we're here. Why are we having a private conversation right now? Like,
that's terrifying.
It really is. Like, yeah. And hi gives me no idea of where this conversation is going to go, like, what you actually want from me. Like, if we're going to have a one-on-one conversation, at least give me, like, a little bit of information on, like, okay, why are we talking? Like, what is your goal here? Like, even if you message me and are like, hey, can I flirt with you for a minute? The answer would probably be no, but at least I know, like, what I'm getting into.
Yeah.
Rather than hi, which is sometimes just followed by a dick. I don't.
Hi, straight to dick. That's not how you do it. The thing I hate, too, about the hi or, like, you know, whatever, like, one word thing that they slide into your DMs with is like, it assumes a level of interest on my part. Like, I'm going to be like, oh, he said hi. How intriguing. I must know more about this person immediately.
So, like, mysterious.
Right. Like, and what often follows this is, like, if I ask them, what can I help you with? Sometimes they're like, I just want to get to know you better. Or, like, I just want to chat. And it's like, okay, but, like, what am I going to get out of that? Like, why would I want to engage in this interaction? That sounds, like, haughty and mean, maybe. But, like, I don't know this person at all. Like, they follow me, but I don't follow them. I have no idea what's interesting about them. So I think it's, like you always say, you have to connect it to, like, a real-world, like, party or some kind of situation like that, where it's like, you wouldn't just go up to someone and, like, assume that they're going to be, like, super interested in talking to you when they don't know anything about you. Like, you're going to establish rapport over time, you know, like, add value to their life, we always say, like, you know, tweet funny things at them and not unsolicited advice. I just had a really angry blog post go up about that, so I'm salty on that point at this juncture, but add value and, like, be interesting and be interested and don't just say hi and don't send a dick unsolicited.
Yeah, and if you, like, if you want to get to a point where you get to know someone more, engage with the stuff they're already putting out into the world, because they're putting it out there because they want you to engage with it. Like, there are very, like, occasionally I'm tweeting into the void, but usually I'm putting things out there because those are the things I want to talk to people about. So talk to me about those things. Mm-hmm. Reply to a tweet. Say something that makes me notice you. Like,
yeah.
Don't just say hi.
Yeah. And when dudes get all, like, I'm saying dudes because it's, let's be real, it's like 99.5% dudes in my experience. When they get all, like,
I've had
a few unsolicited vulva pictures.
Yeah, and I've, like, had people all over the gender spectrum.
Like, I just got an email today from ostensibly a woman. Sometimes dudes will, like, pretend to be women for some kind of sexual nefarious purpose. But I got an email from a woman today just like, hey, I read your article in Cosmo about blowjobs, and I'm also really into blowjobs. And then sent, like, a very long, very graphic description of all the ways she's into blowjobs. And I was like, oh, like, I appreciate your enthusiasm for my work. I didn't consent to hearing about the random sexual escapades of a stranger, and this happens all the time, like, so much.
It's like they're writing their own blog into your email.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You could just...
And the thing
WordPress
is, like...
WordPress is free.
It's sad because, like, I understand why people do it, and I think it's because they feel that I'm, like, a comfortable, like, accepting person who is going to read that and make them feel accepted. And it's really sad that we live in a world where, like, people don't feel comfortable talking about that stuff to just their friends or their family or whatever. But consent is still important. Like, you can't just circumvent that. And, yeah, I get so many people in my DMs being like, your article inspired me to go do XYZ really filthy sex thing. Thank you. And I'm like, that's great for you. I wasn't ready to hear this. It's like 8 a.m. I haven't had my coffee yet. Like, please don't.
And I think, like, you get that in person at, like, I worked sex toy retail for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's people kind of go into a sex space and forget that they forget, like, common decency. Mm-hmm. They, like, because it's a sex space, they figure all sex things are okay, right? And I can just say all of the things because they've never been in a place where talking about sex is okay. So it's just like the dam is broken and they just say everything. And to be on the receiving end of that is exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just people need to kind of remember that, like, even if it's a sex positive space, even if it's an open space, you still want to connect with people in a way that kind of gives them space and you're not just vomiting all of your feelings all over them.
Yeah. The problem, too, with, like, being over-sexualized in these types of contexts is that these people think that they're going to, like, impress me, I guess, by showing that I've read my work and they know what I'm all about. I'm, like, sexy lady. I always say, like, manic, sexy dream girl. But, like, that just shows me that they don't pay attention to what I actually tweet about and write about. Because, like, if they're familiar with my web presence, like, I don't really write erotica. And when I do, I feel very uncomfortable about it. So that just really demonstrates to me that they're really just cherry picking their favorite parts of my work and ignoring usually my favorite parts.
And because you talk about sex, there's only one type of person that talks about sex, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sexy lady, or sexy any person of any gender, but, like, the gender dynamics of this are very complicated. It's exhausting to think about. Okay. I'm curious about your thoughts on, like, how to be in a relationship with someone who writes about sex or makes sex content, because that's quite a different skill set, and I think it's quite often not what people expect it will be.
Yeah, I think I mean, all relationships require a lot of communication, but I think there's a lot of communication that goes into, like, what gets shared, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. My last relationship was with someone who, like, was very aware of my web presence and was very comfortable with me talking about my own experiences with him, but I very much focused on my experiences that he happened to be present for rather than speaking on his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I would, like, sometimes I would send him a text to, like, clear things with him beforehand, or still, I will record an episode of the podcast occasionally and, like, send him a text and be like, so I said this, just a heads up. You're going to hear that on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But I think just, like, being prepared to really talk about and take a minute to reflect on what you feel comfortable being out there in the world, because it's really easy to be like, yeah, write whatever you want about me when things are good.
Yeah. Oh, I know that life.
Say whatever great things you want to say about me.
Oh, compliment my dick on the internet. Yes, please.
Yeah.
That's not going to be it, buddy. Like.
Yeah. But yeah, I think taking a moment to really look at where those boundaries are and what you feel comfortable saying and what you don't, because that was kind of an ongoing process of negotiation in that relationship. Like, it wasn't, I think a lot of people expect it to be super easy to just be like, so I'm okay with this, I'm not okay with this, and we're done.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, totally. I do think you definitely have to approach it like consent in any sexual context. Like you said, it has to be ongoing, it has to be informed, it has to be enthusiastic, and there has to be, like, ongoing discussions, as you said. And I've made this mistake before. I spoke today in the panel this morning about a partner of mine who told me that I made him feel like he was just another blog post or just another tweet to me, which I think that he was saying to hurt me because we were having a really bitter breakup at that moment. But also it, like, really made me think about, like, how I was approaching stuff. Because I really like the Anne Lamott quote where she says, if people wanted you to write warmly about them, they should have behaved better. But I also think that that is a very simplistic approach, especially when we're talking about very vulnerable things like sex, where it's like, yeah, maybe people should have treated you better, but, like, it's also not great to, like, in a retaliatory way, like write about, like, horrible things about, you know, their body or, like, how they like to have sex. Like, that's not cool. That doesn't jive with, like, sex-positive ethics in my mind. So these days I try to be much more conscientious about, like, letting partners, like, read stuff before it goes up and, like, letting them vet their quotes, which, like, as someone who went to journalism school, we always were told, like, don't let sources vet their quotes because they'll tell you don't use this quote. But as I also said this morning in the panel, like, sex writing is very different from hard-hitting journalism in many ways. It requires a different approach.
I think one of the things that I have found most valuable when I'm writing about other people is there's a lot of things I haven't written about because if I'm gonna share it, I want to make sure it is useful information, that someone is going to learn something from it. Whether they're learning a, like, practical, actionable advice or they're learning that they're not alone, I want to be able to distill my content into something that is useful more than just useful for me to get off my chest. And I like to, whenever I can, be kind.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean not being honest, but I'm not interested in putting content out there about people who I've encountered and ostensibly cared about. Most of the people I write about having sex with are people that I've cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not interested in saying things that aren't kind.
Yeah. The writer Gala Darling says something about this that I think about a lot when writing about ex-partners, and she says something like, choose to see your ex-partners as good people who did their best to love you. Which I think is really a compassionate way of looking at it. It doesn't always feel true. That doesn't always resonate for me when people have been horrible to me. But I think as with most things, we're all trying our best. We steered a little off course here, but it's fine. to get back to advice for people trying to date sex bloggers, though, I do want to echo what you said and tell those people to really seriously think about how much you want to have out there, because it's very easy in the throes of like new relationship energy when everything is magical and wonderful to be like, yeah, write anything you want about me, and I want to be attached to you on the internet in perpetuity, and that's all fine. You want to be able to like step back from it a little bit and be like, okay, like how am I going to feel about this in 10 years? And like, if you don't know if you're going to feel great, like have them use a different name for you. Have them avoid using, descriptive features, which is something that I, tend to do as a matter of course. So got to think about this stuff.
Yeah.
Something that our friend Epiphora brought up last night when I was talking to her about this was the very particular special experience that it is to date someone who's a sex toy reviewer. That's a fun adventure. It's not as fun as people think it is, and yet also it's like much more fun in a different way.
Do you know how many people like hit on me by being like, I could test that stuff out with you. Like, you don't want to. It's not. You don't want to. Like,
step one, do you know the difference between buzzy and rumbly? By touch and by sound. Step two, how familiar are you with, like, the different motors from different brands? Step three, are you able to be in the moment and, like, actually remember what things feel like from sex, which is a skill that a lot of people actually don't super have. You'll probably develop it quickly enough if you start dating a sex toy reviewer, but
yeah. But like testing sex toys isn't like fun sexy times most of the time.
Yeah.
Like most of the times testing sex toys is science. You're like sitting down, you're testing it and trying all of like, this way may not be interesting to me, but let me try it because the box says it'll work, which it never does. Like, they just add a bunch of different features to those toys that are not real. It's
Yep. I often feel like I'm, like, an optometrist when I'm testing toys with partners. Like, I'm like, is this better or this? Which is part of the reason why, like, I don't really do this type of work with, like, casual partners. Because it's just, like, not really cool to be like, I have this random object that someone sent me. Do you want to stick it on your dick? It's just, like, kind of weird. When I got the WeVibe Sync to test out, I didn't have a partner at the time, and a friend of mine suggested that I just like go to a sex club and just like meet a random person. And I was like, first of all, I think you're like overestimating the people at the sex club, but also I think you're like overestimating my ability, like my confidence to just do that. To not only be like, you want to fuck me, right? But also like, you want to try this weird sex toy that might hurt us. I have no idea. The WeVibe Sync is fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, like, it sounds super clinical, and, like, there are some great sex toys out there that are super fun, and even those, when you're reviewing them, is still kind of clinical. Like, there are sex toys that I will use with partners and love, and then when I review them, it's a whole different process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did have to test out this toy called the blowjob, the cocksucker's mirror last year, which is just like a, if you imagine like a door, like a thing that you put on your door that's like the do not disturb sign, but if that was a mirror and if you hung it on your dick, basically, and like sounds sexy maybe, but like so we did the blowjob for the review and like parts of it were sexy, but like. I don't really have like much afterglow since becoming a sex toy reviewer, because often instead of just being like, oh, that was nice, that's such a hot blowjob, I'm like, okay, but like, what did it feel like on your dick? And like, was it weird? Was it uncomfortable? Like, would you do it again? Do you think it was worth the amount of money? Like,
yeah, that's the thing. You'll have to answer a lot of questions, which like is just par for the course dating me anyway. Cause I'm like, afterwards I'm like, let's talk about it. That was fun.
Yeah, I am very privileged right now to be dating a fellow kink nerd, and it's so refreshing because I can just be like, so like I called you sir last night for the first time, like how did that feel, and like what did that mean to you, and like do you like sir better than daddy, and it's like this whole, yeah, I love that having partners who are willing and able to geek out with me about that stuff. And it's like hard for me when they don't, because it almost feels like a love language to me. Like if you're not willing to like very critically like overanalyze our sex life, I don't know how compatible we are. Sad but true. Okay. What's like the weirdest way a fan has tried to hit on you? Do you have a story in mind for this?
I haven't gotten like a lot of really weird stuff. I've just gotten a lot of like weird would be interesting. Mm-hmm. And I don't, a lot of people that like hit on me, like that slide into my DMs or whatever, are just not even that interested. Like weird would be a step up. I would be happy with weird.
Because you could write about weird.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the interesting things that's happened to me now 3 times, this is astonishing to me, on Tinder, I'll have a dude message me and tell me that he's non-monogamous and his female partner reads my blog and is a big fan of mine and encouraged him to message me. This happened to me 3 times. One of the dudes I went out on a date with, and he was actually fantastic. And then my favorite one was more recent, where I matched with a dude. He sent a pretty basic, like, hey, how's your week going? Which I just, like, typically don't respond to that type of message because I just don't feel engaged or excited about that. And then like a week or two later, he was like, hey, so like I was showing my girlfriend my Tinder matches and she freaked out because she saw you and she loves your blog and your podcast, and she was so mad when she read the message I sent you, so she told me to send you a better one. Like, shout out to that woman, she's amazing. I stopped messaging the dude because he got kind of boring, TBH, but like
I feel like that happens on Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It does. It's very easy to just, like, lose interest. It's part of the problem.
I had someone message me on OkCupid that was, like, the first message was, like, cheesy pickup line or soul-searching question. And I was, like, the second one?
Yeah.
And we just, like, I forget what the first question was, but we took turns asking, like hypotheticals and weirdly deep questions.
Mm.
Yeah, it was fun for a while and then it got boring. But like, I was like, that is a good starting, like, I like that.
One of the dudes from Tinder whose girlfriend told him to date me, we were about to do our hypotheticals episode for 420, which is where we get really high and we answer really strange sexual hypotheticals. And I was telling him about this because I was getting a little tipsy on the date and was opening up perhaps too much for a first date. And he was like, oh, I have one. If you could eat any sex toy in your collection, not if you could. You wouldn't if you just could. No, he said, if you had to eat one sex toy in your collection, what would it be? And I was like, that's genius. And it's in the episode. Random Tinder guy, we thank you. Okay, this is exciting. This episode of the Dildorks is sponsored by our pals at peepshowtoys.com. Do y'all know Peep Show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
This is an audio medium, folks.
There's a lot of silent nodding. Okay, yeah. So the folks at Peep Show are wonderful, and they hooked us up with like a massive quantity of these the Butters lubes. If y'all don't know, the Butters is an oil-based lube that is made of some really great natural ingredients. So it's not only good as a lube; you can use it as like a lip balm or like hair styling product. The other day I was making out with my boyfriend and I was wearing a very intense liquid lipstick, which the femmes in the room know it's really hard to get that stuff off. So I was like, we're going to have to use the Butters for this. Just like rub it all over your lips and then just like rub it off. Apparently you can also use it for boot blacking. Just like a whole bunch of different kink stuff, and sex stuff. It's a really great product. We'll have some to give away for folks who ask questions, and also for folks who don't, because like I just have a massive fucking box of the Butters. Y'all just take it. So yes, you can get the Butters at peepshowtoys.com, which is our sponsor this week. They were also one of my sponsors to help me get to the summit, so thanks so much to them. They also have a ton of great body safe products, including stuff by Split Peaches, which isn't carried in a lot of different stores. And bedroom. Make me feel right.
Okay, is there ever a situation where they don't know you're a sex blogger and then kind of find out in the dating realm?
That's a good,
one. Yeah.
We're both loudmouths, so we didn't even think about that one.
Yeah, I don't. So I do, with my online dating, I lead with the stuff that I don't want to have to disclose later. So, like, right in the first few sentences, I talk about being a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I talk about being trans, and, like, all of the stuff that I don't want to have to sit down and be like, so listen, because I'm bad at those conversations, so I'm just loud about it and assume everyone knows already. But I know for a lot of folks, it is a process coming out as a sex blogger, and a lot of folks are anonymous for it.
Yeah, so. For very good reasons. Yeah. I am in the privileged position of not having to be anonymous about it, which is a fairly recent thing over the past couple years and is wonderful. And actually, one of the reasons that I love Twitter so much as a venue for meeting new partners, sexual, romantic, etc., is that I don't have to explain my whole deal, because presumably they're reading my stuff, and like kind of my whole Twitter presence is based around the fact that I write about sex. So, because I don't want to get into a situation where like I'm attracted to someone or like having heart feelings about them, and then I disclose that I'm a sex blogger, and they're like, oh, actually, never mind, because that's rough. I have never actually really had that happen to me, fortunately, but I can imagine that that would be really painful, so I just don't even want to allow that to happen.
Yeah.
Do you have you had it happen where you've been on a Tinder and you've talked to the person in DMs, whatever, and then you've met them and the voice is either not what you expected in an ugh way, or not what you expected in an oh my goodness way, yes please, and is that a thing for you anywhere near as much as it would be for me?
I don't know that it's happened to me with voice specifically, but I've definitely like met someone in person and just their whole vibe was different than I was expecting at all, in good or bad ways. The aforementioned Tinder guy whose girlfriend told him to go out with me, I didn't really realize from his photos, but then when I saw him in person, I was like, you look exactly like Travis McElroy. Do y'all know who that is? From the podcast My Brother and Me. And also like his gesticulations and his voice and like the whole thing. He was just very Travis-y. And I was like, has anyone ever told you you look exactly like Travis McElroy? And he's like, I don't even know who that is. So I pulled out Google image search and shoved it in his face. That didn't really answer the question.
Well, I know you have a lot of voice feelings about your current relationship.
Yes, as someone who now has a lot of phone sex and does a lot of hypnokink, voice is kind of important, but I don't know that that was like a pivotal factor in like initial attractions. It was just sort of like, oh, I'm very, very into this person, and also his voice, though.
Honestly, I don't meet a lot of people online, so it's not super frequent that I, like, meet someone and am then surprised by them. Usually, a lot of the people that I'm in relationships with or that I hook up with or whatever are people that I've met in person at events and things, just because that's a way easier way for me to meet people.
Yeah.
So I have, like, sex worker and sex blogger and, like, that I work at a sex shop online, and sometimes I'm interested in people and they'll lead with a question that makes me uncomfortable, like, oh, what's your favorite toy, or, like, what's it like being in sex work, or how much money do you make, and, like, what if you are interested in the person and you want to give them the benefit of the doubt and kind of redirect the conversation, like, what's a good way to do that?
That's such a good question, and yeah, I definitely have had that experience too, and it's hard because sometimes I want to use that stuff as like a litmus test, like if they respond that way, then maybe I don't want to continue to talk to them, but yeah, sometimes you are like interested and attracted to the person, so what I usually do in that situation is either I kind of answer it in like a half-assed way and then just like move on to a different topic, or I'm like, I'm actually not really comfortable answering that right now, but like maybe when I get to know you better. And then depending on how they respond to that will affect how I want to move forward. Because if they're still like shitty about boundaries at that point, then I'm like, yeah, I gave you a shot and it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'll do that like half-answer thing, or I'll... sometimes I'll explain why that's not a great question. Like, if it's something like, what's your favorite toy or whatever, I'll be like, yeah, I get asked that all the time at my job. And, you know, I like to explain that when I'm picking out toys for people, it's more about what they like than what I like. And just kind of give this, like, I'm answering your question. but I'm also explaining, like, why it's not a great question, and why it's not an interesting question. Because more often than not, like, they're invasive, but they're boring. And that's my bigger complaint, honestly. Because I'm like, yes, that is the first question you think of when you see that I work in a sex shop, like, or that I'm a sex toy reviewer. Like, dig a little deeper. Think for an extra 5 seconds. I'm sure you can come up with something else. But I think kind of explaining to them that, like, hey, this is why that's not a great question, and see if it gives them a second, like, gives them a chance to kind of come up with something better, or kind of, like, react with, like, oh, that makes sense, yeah, and then take the conversation somewhere else.
Yeah. I have a line in my OkCupid profile about, like, how part of my job involves teaching strangers about the dangers of jelly dildos, and I get an unbelievable amount of messages of dudes asking me, what's wrong with jelly dildos? And I get why they're asking that. But I also kind of see it as a sign that they're maybe not the type of person I'm looking for, because I think the type of person I want to date is someone who would be curious enough and, like, thoughtful and conscientious enough to, like, go look it up and then maybe ask me a more interesting question, or would just, like, already know it because I date a lot of sex nerds.
I had someone on Grindr send me a picture of their toy collection. They were like, you want to come try these with me? And, like, Grindr doesn't say that, like, I think it says I'm a sex educator, but nothing about, like, sex toys or whatever. And they sent me a picture of, like, what they thought was an impressive collection of sex toys. It was, like, 8. and they were like, you want to come use these? And I was like, ew, no. So this one, and this one are completely unsafe. Please get rid of those. And he was like, this went in a very different direction. I was like, yeah, it did. And then I stopped answering. Like, I was literally just there to be like, your toys are garbage. Be better. You're gonna make yourself sick. Please don't put porous things in your ass. Oh my god. And then I, like, flitted away again like a sex education fairy.
Reminding me of the time I hooked up with a guy from Twitter who I was in his hotel room and he pulled out like a lube packet sample to use with me, and I like read the ingredients list and I was like, nope. But he also was like, well, I know it's no squillid, but, and I was like, what did you just say? I got to explain to him why Slickwit is in fact a very punny and excellent name.
I played with someone recently who also works in, like, the sex toy industry or whatever, mm-hmm. and, like, was talking about forced orgasm stuff, and I was like, oh, did you bring a magic wand? And he pulled out the corded one, and I was like, sweetie, I'm gonna go get mine. I was like, plus, we were in a dungeon. There are no outlets.
Like, so, is that common? Don't they have to have outlets?
Well, I was at kink camp, so the dungeon is a barn.
Oh, okay.
So...
why don't you bring your corded vibrator
to camp?
Just, like, plug it into the earth? Like, what are you going to do? Bring your own generator?
Solar powered.
I'm so confused.
Have you ever had anyone who met you and thought that you were different than they expected? Kind of a riff on Bianca's question.
Mm. That's a really good question. Yes. I usually get people telling me that I'm more shy in person or more quiet than they expected, which I think is just a nice way of saying more awkward than they expected. Because people are like, oh, you're so confident online. And I'm like, I don't think I am. I guess talking about your vagina a lot on Twitter is confident, but, like, I don't know. I've been doing it for 6 years, so it just feels normal to me. But then, like, in person, I'm very shy and awkward.
Yeah, I get a lot of people either who knew me online and meet me, or people who knew me in person and find out about my online presence. Like, without fail, always, I just get the, yeah, sounds right. Mm-hmm. Seems right. This all lines up. I have a coworker who follows me on Twitter. I don't know why he hasn't undone that yet. But he'll come into work every once in a while and be like, yeah, I saw your tweet earlier. And I'm like, why? It was a picture of my ass. I don't know why you... And he's like, nah. So yeah, whatever. I'm like, all right. Like, he's a really good friend of mine, too. But, like, I feel like everyone, like, just... I'm just so out there as me that there's not really... I don't hide pieces of me well. So people are just like, yeah, sounds right.
My mom tried to follow me on Twitter a while ago. Mm. I was like, nope, block.
That sounds like your mom.
Yeah. I'm almost like brought up daddy dom role play in front of my dad. She thought she was being funny and like appealing to my interests. I was like, this is not the time for this.
This is uncomfortable.
There might never be a time for this. Okay. Any more questions?
Nope.
Want to wrap it up?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to do our wrap-up spiel that you've heard a million times if you listen to our show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dildorks. Thank you also to everybody who joined us for Dildorks Live. It is actually, honestly, like, so wonderful to see so many people here. I really, really appreciate y'all coming out. It fills me with joy. I'm going to start crying if I think about it too much, so I'm just going to move the fuck on. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice, as long as you're not my mom. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app or showing up to a live conference recording, apparently.
Hi.
Hi.
Patreon?
Yeah.
Did you say that?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
If you guys want to support us, you can do so by going into your favorite podcast app and rating and reviewing us. It brings us up in the charts, makes us easier to find. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thedildorks. That money helps us get here and do other really rad things.
Yep, we appreciate it a lot. Thank you so much to Protodome, who did our amazing theme song, I Want You in My Bedroom. Which we might listen to after this is done, just for fun. Thank you also to Amy, who did our logo for us. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you once again to Peep Show Toys for sponsoring this episode of our show. You can check them out at peepshowtoys.com. I forgot how to spell a little bit. Y'all know how to spell toys. Please come get lube. And thank you so much to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye.
So yeah, feel free to live tweet. You can take pictures of both of us, and you can tweet.
We're real cute.
Yeah. You can tweet anything we say. Hashtag it Dildorks Live.
Tweet anything we say. You're making some promises. We edit this show for a reason, Kate. Yeah.
All right, we're going to start the thing.
Oh, my God.
It's really weird doing in front of those people. Usually it's just like me in my room, like no makeup. Giant headphones.
I'm wearing pants while recording, which is just a new experience for me. So.
See, this is what I edit out of the show every week, is me just like thinking, like, do I have more to say about that? Just like editing very long pauses, especially when we smoke up before the show.
Yeah. Then it's just a lot of me being like, oh, I had words. They were clever in everything. Hang on. Yeah, I had a thing and it's totally gone. And I didn't smoke before this one. How did this happen?
Congratulations, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I did that thing. I had the thought and it was totally gone.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, you want me to ask you another question?
I guess.
Okay. This was actually brought up.
Oh, I remembered it.
Okay.
Great.
Every time.
This is why we edit, folks. See, you told them they could tweet anything. Now they're going to tweet that I forgot.
That's not interesting content. Y'all are not going to tweet that. How are we for time? Because we want to do a Q&A. Are y'all thinking about questions that you have vaguely on this topic for a bit later? I don't know if any of
or
you
any
have...
any topic, really.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Our purview is sex, dating, and masturbating officially, but...
And, like, start thinking, because if we ask later and y'all just stare back at me, it's going to be super awkward, and you're going to hurt my feelings.
And we're going to have a surplus of lube, too much lube. Like, I know we always say that there's no such thing as too much lube, but, like, actually there might be such a thing as too much lube. I'm going to have to take it back in my suitcase, I guess.